Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, welcome to Pixels. This is Pixels. It's a show where we talk about video game news, analysis of the industry trends and events and announcements. We talk about games. That's a cool show. I hope you enjoy it. I certainly enjoy doing it. And I enjoy doing it so much, I'm going to be doing it alone today. I usually like to have co-hosts on shows, and this one included, because we can, you know, bounce ideas off of one another, and then you don't have to listen to me and what I think is 100% right all the time. But you know, this time we've had a few. I'm sure you've heard about what happened in France, and I didn't quite have time to do the scheduling, and the guests were. It was complicated, so. Anyway, I figured I still wanted to do the show and sort of have a change of pace and environment. And what better than talking about video games to people you like and enjoy the company of? And that's you, listener, you. I'm pointing my finger at you, even though you're not seeing it. So I'm gonna be running through the news. And I'm going to be talking a lot about Sony. There's been a bunch of stuff happening with Sony in the past couple of weeks. And then I'm going to go through the games of 2015 that I am the most excited for, with a tier system of different, you know, labels of excitement. It's going to be incredible. Seriously, you really should listen, because it's going to be out of this world. Disclaimer, it might not be out of this world. All right, let's get into the news. PlayStation 4 sales reach 18.5 million worldwide. That's huge, isn't it? Maybe. I don't know. Who knows? 18.5 is sort of an abstract number, isn't it? So I guess we should compare it with other sale numbers from previous consoles. But even that, it's kind of difficult to compare and difficult to get a clear idea of what it actually is. It's because even when you get other numbers from other consoles, there might be differences in numbers of territories where those consoles were available. Or maybe there wasn't two Christmas periods or holiday periods in that span and things like that. So it's really difficult to see exactly how enormous that number is, but certainly it's not small. I guess we can all agree on that. 18.5 is not a small number. So just to give you a little bit of comparison, they shipped almost 20 million PS2s as of September 30th, 2001. And the PS2 is the biggest selling console ever. So at the end of September 2001, that was about almost 2 years after the console was launched. It was launched in March 2000 in Japan and Asia, October and November 2000 in North America and Europe, the PAL region, as Wikipedia refers to it. So it's basically almost as much as the PlayStation 2 did in a longer amount of time. So it's certainly, and again, the PS2 was the biggest selling console ever. So the PS2 sold 150 million units, 155 million, I believe, total through its life cycle. And the Wii, which is often regarded as the biggest game console, certainly in recent memory, but we might sometimes think it was such a cultural phenomenon. Surely it sold more than the PS2. Well, actually it didn't. It sold about 100 million total. Circumstances were different, and there were, you know, a lot of the time was not the same, the time frame was not the same, the longevity, all of that. But still, so it's the PS4 has sold in a year with two holiday periods more than the PS. The PS4 sold in a year more than the PS2 did in a year and a half. It also sold almost as much as the Wii sold in a year, and that was a cultural phenomenon. It's kind of a big deal, especially since it seems Microsoft is lagging behind significantly with the Xbox One. That number, the 18.5, was for the PlayStation 4 sell through. That means it got into the hands of the customers. It's not sitting in a warehouse somewhere. And the latest number we have for Xbox One, I think, was 13.5 million sell in. That means it might still be in a warehouse somewhere. Now, I'm sure, you know, Microsoft might have better numbers to share at some point, but I'm not sure they're going to share them very soon because it might make them look like a little bit bad. So anyway, numbers, who cares, right? Let's talk about more exciting things. The PlayStation Now all-you-can-eat subscription service, $20 a month, $45 for 3 months, which obviously comes to, 35 divided by 3, that's, yes, 15 a month. For an all-you-can-play subscription, that's the streaming video service, obviously everyone knows that. I think it's a good deal. Obviously, it all hinges on, let's assume you have a good enough connection and it works for you. Let's assume it works as advertised for the purposes of this discussion, which I think it does work as advertised. Certainly, the beta testing has been going pretty well in the past few months. So $15 a month, you get all of the games that this service includes. I'm going to try and find the list here. PlayStation Now game list. That's one of the first suggestions for through Google. It all hinges on the games that you can play. And the thing is, they're not bad. They're all PS3 games, so don't expect to be able to play unlimited amounts of any PlayStation 4 service. But you do have some pretty cool things. It's a lot of Sony things. You have Killzone, Uncharted, Infamous, Final Fantasy 13. Ultra Street Fighter 4, Saints Row, Mass Effect 2, God of War, etc., etc., etc. I think it might be a service that, if it expands, and even more importantly, if there are if there's competition in that field, I really hope that Microsoft is going to announce something somewhat similar, and then Steam is also going to get into that fray. Valve. Maybe they will, I don't know, but that would be super exciting if the price was brought down just a little bit, maybe, you know, include the PlayStation Plus service in this, or maybe on the Microsoft side, include the Xbox Live in a similar service. I think within a few months, maybe a year, maybe a couple of years, maybe it's going to take time, but I think these things might be a really serious contender for your dollar, your money. It might be a serious way, a way you could consider seriously to play games. We'll see. I'm probably not going to be subscribing right now, which flies in the face of what I've been saying. And also, it's not available in Europe, so that also doesn't help. But I'm really excited for the possibilities that this opens. For me, it's a little bit more real than some other things, like maybe even VR. I think there's still a lot of things to figure out in the VR space. This is a little bit more concrete. It's a little bit more now. And that's funny because it's called PlayStation Now. There's also the PlayStation View, which is their IPTV service coming to PS3 and PS4 and, sometime early this year. And the PlayStation TV being discounted, I think it's going to be able to receive the PlayStation View service as well. And, if you put all of this together, you can get a PlayStation TV for $100, I believe now, with a controller, and $80 without a controller at Amazon, Best Buy, GameStop, and Walmart. If you have PlayStation Now and PlayStation View, do you need a, it could be a decent device and provide you with enough that you don't need something else. I don't know about the PlayStation View service. I don't know, what channels the crazy Americans have and which ones they want. I'm guessing there's no ESPN on PlayStation View, so how can you live without that giant men mountain people hitting into one another? I was gonna say hit it on each other, on the field. Like, I have to have my guy running into headfirst into another guy. Anyway, that's sports. As you can figure out, I'm not a big fan of actual sports or esports, to be honest, for that matter. So yeah, anyway, PlayStation TV, maybe it's a deal. Maybe it could be fun if you have PlayStation Now, at least. I don't know. Xbox One, yes. Let's talk about Microsoft a little bit. Xbox One, the latest dev kits have been freeing up some extra computing power for developers, meaning both of these consoles, PS4 and Xbox One, have 8-core CPUs. And they have both been restricting use of the CPU to 6 cores, keeping a couple for system tasks. And the Xbox One dev kit has added a certain amount of a seventh core. That means that the Kinect might not be as available as it would be, because some of that functionality is handled by that seventh core. But it means that games are running better, and it's giving a slight edge, apparently, in some cases for frame rate, for example, over the PlayStation 4. And since, there's a ton of things that contributed to the dominance of Sony in this generation, and not the least of which was the disastrous reveal, I believe, of the Xbox One, which we covered in the previous episode of Pixels. We covered it at length. I hope you listened. If you didn't, well, you should, because I think it was interesting, if I can say so myself. And there was a lot of things, including the issues of performance, because given the fact that both consoles are basically equivalent power-wise and, well, a lot of things-wise, games-wise, there are very few exclusives. When you have a slight, ridiculously small edge, performance-wise, then people start thinking, all right, they're both the same. Maybe I'll go this way. I don't think it's quite enough that Microsoft is getting a little bit more power now to reverse the trend. I think price is a more powerful motivator, and obviously games, but the really big deals are not coming very, very soon. And by the way, the price went back up. The price of the Xbox One went back up to $399. That is dangerous, I think. I think they have to do it because they said it was going to be temporary, and if they don't bring it back up, it's going to look really bad. However, I would not be surprised if it came back down to 440 to 349 without Kinect, obviously. By when? Easter? maybe even before that. Like, I don't know, Valentine's Day. Be my Valentine, play on Xbox One with me, because we are one, like the heart of the silicon CPU console that beats at 7 cores per hour. No, maybe something like that. So anyway, I think by Easter, 349 will be back, but we'll see. Microsoft is also hiring for top secret Xbox projects. What might that be? It's fairly reasonable to assume they're working on a VR headset. I would be surprised if we didn't hear about that at E3. I'm hoping they're working on a streaming video service thing. They do, after all, have all of those Azure, Cloud, Microsoft racks of computer things, power in the cloud somewhere. They should put them to use in that way. So that secret projects, what else could it be? If you could, you know, have your video game dream, what would you want that top secret Xbox project to be? I think for me, it would be a slimmer Xbox One that would be, you know, $299, because I want to buy the console, but I just can't justify it. I want to play, you know, Sunset Overdrive. It doesn't warrant the purchase of a console, I think. Forza, I'm not that big of a car fan. Master Chief Collection, yeah, I want to play it too, but I'm not $400 worth of want to play it. I'll buy one at some point. Intel, they announced a compute stick, which is basically one of those HDMI sticks that can run Windows. I like the Google Cast. It's cheap and it's limited, you know, in relation to its price. That's absolutely fair. It's a cool little device, but having a device that actually runs Windows, it's funny. I was wondering what I could use as the cheapest possible device to stream my PC's games to my TV. Heresy, I'm sorry, the PC Master Race will excommunicate me. I just enjoy the sit back experience. Anyway, I'm still a PC gamer at heart. Don't worry. Don't freak out. I'm here. But you know, so I was wondering about that, and no one had a really clear solution. And then comes Intel. I can't speak today. Intel, I have a beautiful, lovely French accent. Except it's not really French, is it? What is it? It's mid-Atlantic, I've been told. Anyway, Intel introduces their compute stick. It has an Atom processor, a quad-core CPU. That's not bad. It has a Windows version with 2 GB of RAM and 30 GB of flash storage. And there's also a Linux version, which has less RAM and less storage. And it's not very expensive. It's somewhere around, I think, $150 for the Windows version and $100 or even less for the Linux version. That's a cheap computer that you can just plug into your TV, and you have so much more possibilities and capabilities than you do with your, you know, whatever other box you use. For the price, I think it might be interesting to get one just to mess around and do a video streaming and, you know, home theater / video game streaming device, and plus a ton of other things. I don't know. I think it's an interesting device. Valve is going to finally unveil the Steam controller at GDC. Can't remember when GDC is. I wanted to check it out. I think it's sometime in March. I think so. March or later. Yeah, March 2nd and 6th. 2nd to 6th. I have not completely lost my mind. I remember all of those days and years of working in the video game industry. GDC is early March, and we're going to see finally the Valve Steam controller. That's really exciting as well. It might, you know, be expand on the excitement of that Intel stick thing, because you can just basically stream your Steam, all of your Steam games, including those that could work with the Steam controller that emulates a keyboard, apparently not too horribly, and finally have a PC experience on your couch. The best of both worlds. I'm not sure it's going to work as advertised. I'm sure actually it's not, but it could work well enough. And they've gone dark for months now. The Steam Box was supposed to come out even possibly last year. I mean, the specifications, the specs, should have been finalized a while ago, and they weren't. My guess is they iterated on that Steam controller for months, and they realized they had to maybe even start from scratch, but at least change it fundamentally. And we're going to see the finalized version. Maybe not fundamentally. That's a big thing. It certainly evolved, if you've been following that. It evolved a lot through the past, you know, year and before that. I mean, the early part of the year. It evolved enormously. And anyway, I'm excited to see finally what it is, because that Steam controller is basically the only missing piece to the Steam boxes. So yeah, we'll know more about that in March. I'm excited. Awesome Games Done Quick raises more than $1.5 million for charity. Charity they've been playing for a week, I think. It's cool. There isn't a huge amount to say, except they know how to do it. It's not just a game marathon. They do fun stuff. I mean, they've done some weird hacks and weird memory injection in some games. I saw that Mario thing. It was fun. It was interesting. And yeah, you know what? Awesome Games Done Quick. They raise money for charity. That's good. That's obviously always good. Not going to stand there and say it's not. Or maybe I will. Maybe I'll sit here and say it's not. No, I won't. All right. A couple of extra news before we get into the games of 2015. If I ask you, what game is the most sold in Japan in 2014? I'm guessing that you're going to guess something that starts with Po and that ends with Kamon. And you would be wrong. Well, really, you would be half wrong because it's a clone. It's Yo-Kai Watch. Yo-Kai Watch 2 is the one that sold, was the biggest selling game in 2014 in Japan. It was released in July, and it's a 3DS title. And it sold about 3 million, I believe. And there were, two, it's, I'm reading the Polygon article. There were two editions of the game. And there was Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire that was sold, that came out this year as well, and sold about 2.5 mil. Pokemon was released a lot later. It was in November. So anyway, it's just interesting to think that Pokemon is not, well, no, actually, who cares? Pokemon, it's Japanese stuff, 3DS. You don't care, right? I don't care. Anyway, Yo-Kai Watch, if you like Pokemon, maybe try it out. Who cares? I'm going to make enemies for this show. I don't like Pokemon. I wasn't, you know, I'm old. I wasn't in like high school or junior high when it came out. It's a small, like, ooh, I choose you, beast thing. No, I don't like it. I've tried. I mean, it's one of the games that I want to get into. No, not really, but at least I want to get it. I just don't get it. I'm an old curmudgeon. That's what I am. I'm also an old curmudgeon about esports. There's been this Smite thing that's been going on for the past couple of days. World Championship for Smite, which is a third-person view MOBA. I'm sure you've heard of it. It sort of was in the shadow of Dota and League of Legends for the past year or two, I would say. It's still here. It's not like it's not, you know, it's still getting airtime. It's just nowhere as big. Until this championship, they put a lot of money in this. And for example, the champions won $1.3 million. $1.3 million! That's a lot of money. That's Dota International numbers. And it's working. They're huge on Twitch, at least for now. And I think they got an enormous amount of visibility with this, an amount that they would not have gotten in any other way. Certainly they didn't in the past, you know, couple of years. So I guess it means when you want more visibility, throw money at the problem? Maybe. I certainly have not seen or heard or honestly even gotten interested myself into Smite that much ever before. It looks kind of fun, and it exposed the game to a lot of people. I think a lot of people are going to try it if they're into that kind of thing. And by that kind of thing, I mean competitive video games, not necessarily MOBAs, because it has a sort of, not FPS, but TPS, obviously, feeling, because that's kind of what it is. And it exposed the game to a lot of people. So go Smite, I guess. And that was it. Pokemon and Smite, two games I don't care about, to round up our news segment. But I mean, it's still a big deal. Pokemon is the biggest thing ever, and it wasn't first this year in Japan. Japan! And Smite, yeah, is that the beginning of a MOBA upheaval? Maybe. And I don't know why I'm not as excited about esports as other people. I'm sure I'm not alone, right? Let me know if I'm alone. Let me know if I'm not alone. It's something, and we're going to have a bunch of those in the games of 2015. It's something I would love to get into. I just don't. I think my good friend Scott Johnson was talking about something like that. Maybe it was I can't remember which game it was. He was saying, I really want to like it. And it wasn't Destiny, I don't think. But he was saying, I really want to like it, but I'm not. Or maybe it was Jeff Kanata and on DLC. I can't remember. Anyway, both excellent shows. Boob Show, DLC, downloadable commentary. If you don't have them on your listening device, then you should. So yeah, anyway, I'm not getting into esports and... maybe I will one day. We'll see. 2015. So there are a bunch of games here that I want to talk about, and I was wondering if I should go chronological or big releases or not. Let me just grab a glass of water. Drink of water. My throat is getting really, really dry. Maybe I shouldn't do this in just one go. That's suicide mission there. I'm also recording a show in French in a couple of hours, so can't afford to not have that pristine voice of mine. So I thought I was going to do it maybe chronologically, maybe, you know, AAA biggest games. Ultimately, I decided on the level of excitement that I feel towards these games. It probably means that not all of those are going to be in there, but that's, you know, to be expected. You can't expect and love all of the games. There's a bunch of them, though. I took a list of all the biggest games. There was about, 25 in there, maybe more, and went through them, left aside things like Battlefront, Star Wars Battlefront, because I'm hoping it's good, but I just can't get super excited about it. Star Fox, same deal, because I love my Wii U, and I want more games on it, but I don't know, Star Fox, we'll see. I'm would hope it's good. I'm hoping I'm going to be surprised, but I'm not excited about it. So I'm going to go chronologically, but in three tiers. The first tier is games I want to try. It's games I'm curious about. I'm not sure they're going to be great, but I certainly want to know more. I'm intrigued. The Order is one of them. The Order is a PS4 exclusive coming out on February 20th. And it's not as big as we were led to believe it was going to be when it was first introduced. I think it was 2013 at E3 when the console was introduced. And it looked a lot more ambitious than it's looking now. Now it's looking like it's an arena shooter. Basically, you follow a story, it's well done, it cuts at some point, you're in a room and you have to kill everyone, and then you leave the room and there's another bit of the story. Basically, it's Uncharted. I can't remember who described it like that. I think it might have even been on this show, but it's Uncharted, kind of. And looking at it like that, why not? I don't think it's going to be anywhere near the Game of the Year list, but maybe it's going to be something fun to try. Battlefield Hardline. That's coming out March 17th. I'm also curious. I've never really been a Battlefield fan. I've been a Call of Duty fan back in the Modern Warfare 1 and 2 era. I adored those games. I thought they were super well done, especially the single player aspect. The multiplayer, not so much. And I mean, yeah, I liked it. I played it a lot, but it wasn't what drove me to the game. Battlefield, however, Hardline, is taking a very strong narrative approach to single player. It's like, in case you haven't seen the trailers, it's kind of like a TV show with previously on Battlefield Hardline, and it's not a war game, it's a cup. It's my glass, it's half full. It's a cop game, like, you know, cop buddy TV show, things like the, is it NCIS? I don't watch those things, but like super explosive cop buddy movie TV show thing. And it looks really well done. I mean, looking at the trailers, I want to play that character. I want to be in that adventure. At the same time, I understand it's maybe not going to be exactly like this once I actually play it, and it might just be a reskin of Battlefield, just like Battlefront might be a reskin, a Star Wars reskin of Battlefield. And since I don't really like Battlefield, I'm not... I don't know. We'll see. But I'm curious. I want to try it. Mortal Kombat X. Is it 10 or X? I think it's X. Mortal Kombat! April 14th. I'm more of a Street Fighter guy than a Mortal Kombat guy. And I'm still... That trailer they showed was sort of made me want to try it. Again, curious. I know that there are two schools of thought, and, you know, we look at each other from our Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat entrenchments and send looks of thunder across the battlefield. But, you know, occasionally we cross over and have fun playing a game. Maybe I'll give it a try. Halo 5. I've never really gotten into Halo because I didn't have an Xbox One, I mean the first Xbox, and when I got my 360 I played a little bit of Halo 4, was it? I think, and just didn't get into it. But then Bungie made Destiny, and I really love Destiny. And as I'm sure you know, in Destiny, if you don't enjoy the gameplay, meaning the actual act of shooting enemies in the face, there's nothing for you in that game. And I enjoy that aspect enormously. I've been playing on and off Destiny for, you know, since it came out. I go back to it once a week, I would say. And I played a lot. I have a level 29, I think, which is, to some, I'm sure it's ridiculous. But, you know, it means I put a certain amount of time into the game. And my guess is what everyone's been saying about Halo is that the gameplay is perfect. So I'm curious to check it out. I even sort of almost pulled the trigger on the Master Chief Collection on an Xbox One to get the Master Chief Collection just because I wanted to, you know, see what all the hubbub was about. But certainly by the time Halo 5 rolls out, I will have one and I'll want to check it out. The next one, so Halo 5 is Q4 of this year. The next one is going to be sort of controversial, I'm sure. It's also slated for Q4, and it's one I want to try. It's not my super duper excited list. It's Zelda U. And I'm sure a lot of people are, you know, sort of angry with me right now. It's like, how can you not be excited about Zelda? I kind of am, but, you know, I've never really loved the 3D Zeldas. I loved, you know, A Link to the Past and A Link Between Worlds, the one that just came out last year on 3DS. Was it last year or the year before? Can't remember. But I've tried a few Zelda 3D games, and I never got hugely into them. I played the one, you know, the Ocarina of Time. I didn't like it. I'm sorry. It wasn't my thing. So it looks interesting. Zelda U looks interesting. I'm just a little bit worried that given the sale numbers of the Wii U, they're sort of rushing it a little bit. Maybe they're not. Maybe it's been in, you know, development for long enough that it's just baked. But I'm cautious, so we'll see. Crackdown 3 has a TBD 2015 release date. Same deal as Halo, really. I never got into Crackdown, and I think everyone... It's an iconic game for the Xbox 360. It was it a launch title or very early title? I can't remember. It's a game that everyone speaks of very fondly. So I'm curious to check it out. And the trailer was so over the top. I don't know if you've seen it, but basically what happens is that there's a guy that infiltrates a building, and they have to go through security and all of this and plant a bomb in the building and make the building explode. Not so the building explodes, but so it collapses onto another building that they couldn't get to, and then they go and attack a guy that's in the other building. And that's like, we're talking skyscrapers, obviously. So if that's the kind of over-the-top action and quality gameplay, as, you know, everyone's been saying, that is worthy of all that hype... hype is a difficult word to use, but I think in this case it could be warranted because it's not like incredible hype, but it's solid, acknowledgement and excitement, maybe not hype. So yeah, I want to try it. The Division, again, TBD 2015. 2015, no, The Division, it's the other word I wanted to say. The Division is a game that I did not believe was possible when it was first introduced. Graphically, I thought it was bullhooky for sure. It's just too beautiful. It's impossible, not just for, I mean, certainly for a computer to generate these images, that I could trust. a computer could do it. Whether or not, you know, the this generation's console could do it was up for debate, but a computer could do that. But for the human teams to create a world like this and to put in the immense amount of work and minutiae that was necessary to design every tiny portion of the world that, you know, that was in this game, with all the details and the tiny, if you just look at one car, it's got so much detail. Like, how long does the team have to work to do this? It can't be financially and even, you know, chronologically possible. It doesn't work in my mind, in my brain. It breaks my brain. However, so I didn't believe that it would be like that. Kind of like what we saw with Watch Dogs, you know, the initial visuals and then what it was like in the end, which I understand is not about, was a computer power issue, not a design, graphical design issue. But in The Division, it was mind-blowing. And the thing is, then I played Assassin's Creed Unity, which is, ultimately, I finished it a couple of days ago, and it's not an awesome game. I know that I said it's incredible, and that's the thing. I think it is graphically, and it's fun enough. I'm not saying it's bad, but the script, the scenario, the script, the story is abysmal. It's graphically, it's amazing. It's amazing, and it makes me believe that The Division is possible. And honestly, I've played a few games. First Light, by the way, it's available on PS Plus right now. Infamous First Light. If you haven't played it, if you don't have PS Plus, I think it might be worth getting PS Plus for the year just for this game, because it's $15. So that's what, a third of your PS Plus subscription, and surely, within, you know, the next 11 months, you're going to have the two-thirds left worth of games. It's a really cool game. It's not like the best game ever, but for the $15, it's a great 5 to 8 hours of time. I really enjoyed it, especially after playing Assassin's Creed Unity, where some of the gripes I have with the game is how stuttery the gameplay is, meaning, how many times did I start free running in Assassin's Creed and I would like jump onto a casket, and then I couldn't remember which button I had to press to get down from the casket, like this, you know, 25 inch tall thing that where I was like stumbling about. It was, and in Infamous, it's so fluid, so enjoyable. The travel is so enjoyable in a way that Assassin's Creed, unfortunately, isn't yet, even though it's gotten a lot better than it was before. And it's not to say that it works in Assassin's Creed, works in the Assassin's Creed world. It's just that First Light is very, very enjoyable. It, almost like the Batman Arkham games. They're also very fluid, very easy, very natural in the way you traverse the environment. Anyway, tangent. First Light, I think it's worth your money. And I'm going to check out Infamous Second Son, which I don't think I would have checked out if I hadn't played First Light. So, well played, Sony, I guess, even though you only gave the bare minimum for the PS Plus, PSN outages from the holiday period. I'm still wagging my finger at you. Anyway, The Division. I think, ultimately, having seen all that, I think it's going to be possible that the game comes out as it was presented initially. And that would be freaking exciting. But, again, this is my... I want to try it. I want to see it with my own eyes before I believe it's good. And that's what the category is. The next two games are, I can sort of lump them into the same category. We're still in the third tier of I Want to Try It. It's Metal Gear Solid V, The Phantom Pain, and Final Fantasy XV. Both are TBD 2015, and both are from a series of games that I enjoyed tremendously initially, and that I believe lost its way horribly, that was completely ruined by the developers that, oddly enough, were behind the initial games that I loved, that, which I don't understand. I think it's kind of like George Lucas, what he did with Star Wars, in the eyes of some people. I'm not naming any names. But MGS1 was a work of genius. And MGS2 just completely ruined the series for me. Final Fantasy, I have to go back a long time for me to be super excited about those titles. But they were there at some point. And they also lost their way pretty spectacularly, I think. And I'm thinking now might be the time to check them out again. Now might be the time to get interested into those games. And I wanna try them. I wanna see what they are. I'm reasonably excited about both of those games. Maybe it's time that I get back into them. Tier 2. That is the tier for the games that... It's not just that I want to try them. It's not that I'm curious. It's that I'm actually optimistic about those games. It's games... And there are a lot less in here. It's games that I'm actually... I'm most probably going to buy. The previous ones, it's games that I'm probably going to wait for reviews or maybe a price to come down a little bit, which it does very quickly nowadays, because back in my day, it wasn't like that. I forgot one in here. Let me correct that. There we go. So the ones I want to be optimistic about, and I'm probably going to buy, probably, don't hold me to it, I'm thinking I might, Bloodborne, it comes out March 24, and that's, you know, I want to get into the Dark Souls, Demon Souls, all of that series. I want to get why it's so exciting. I got Dark Souls 1 on Xbox Live on the 360, played it a little bit. I sort of touched with the tip of my finger kind of why it would be interesting, but I figured I had so many things to play. I thought I didn't want to destroy my efforts by trying a game that was really punishing, because a lot of people report that Dark Souls 1 was probably the most punishing of that style of games, and but I want to experience that joy, that excitement of overcoming those enemies without much direction, the sort of hardcore but possible feeling of that seems to be at the heart of those games. So Bloodborne, I'm probably going to try, probably going to get, and I'm really optimistic. I hope I'm gonna like it. It's kind of the same story with Witcher 3 that comes out on May 19. I've tried Witcher 1 for it. I put a few hours into it. I've tried Witcher 2, and I don't think I put a few hours into it. I must have been distracted by, you know, some other game that came around, or maybe just, I don't know, work. But I'm hoping Witcher 3 is going to be the Witcher for me, and that rhymes. Witcher 3, the Witcher for me. Because I adored... not Morrowind, The Elder Scrolls 5. Ah, gosh, I'm blanking. How can I blank? Elder Scrolls Skyrim. God, I didn't Google it, I promise. I loved Skyrim. I played, I don't know, maybe 80 hours of that game. It was glorious. And I'm hoping that The Witcher 3... I'm not saying I want it to be Skyrim, certainly not. I want it to be The Witcher, And what I'm saying is, I think I have a place in my heart for this, if you put it widely, this category of games. It's not necessarily the open worldliness that I'm looking for, but it's a little bit of everything, like this being this adventure thrown into a world that you're gonna I think I'm describing half of all of the games in the history, so I'm gonna stop. But Witcher 3, I want to like it. May 19th. I'm optimistic. I'm really excited about both Bloodborne and Witcher 3. Mirror's Edge, the reboot, redone, whatever. It's not even certain it's going to come out in 2015. It might be 2016, but I really loved Mirror's Edge. I thought it was a great game, and I'm hoping that we see a new one. And if we do, I will probably get it when it comes out. Same deal with Street Fighter V. It's not even certain it's going to be out in 2015. Might be 2016. But as I was saying when we were talking about Mortal Kombat X, I'm a Street Fighter head. The one caveat is it's kind of the same engine as Street Fighter IV graphically. It seems very similar. Doesn't mean it's necessarily a bad thing. I'm going to play it for sure. I love Street Fighter. So, yeah, I'm excited about that one. And No Man's Sky, that's an obvious one as well. It's not in my tier one because I'm still a little bit afraid that it's not going to be all we're hoping it's going to be, but I'm optimistic. I'm certainly going to play it as soon as it comes out. It comes out in 2015. We don't have a date. But yeah, I want to love it. I'm optimistic. I think it's going to be good. So that's the thing with that game. I think it's going to be good. I don't think it's going to be stellar. Stellar, because, right? Anyway, I don't think it's going to be the game that saves the world. I think it's going to be a good game. So, you know, and I like good games. Not every game has to be master of the universe. See? Universe? yeah, okay, I'll stop. Yeah, so No Man's Sky, it's probably going to be good. And now we get to Tier 1. Tier 1 is Excitatron. That's the tier for the games that I'm really super excited about. There are only three games in there. And to be quite honest, the first one, I'm not 100% sure it belongs in there. But I am excited because even though it's not as incredible as I hope it's going to be, I want it to be and I'm excited that it could be. So that's Tomb Raider, that third one. I really loved Tomb Raider, the reboot that came out, what was it, 2012? Can't remember. Got it on PS Plus last year. And I loved it. Uncharted is one of my favorite games ever, especially Uncharted 2. It was a mind-blowing game. My mind was blown. Do you remember that scene in the building? The collapsing building? That's something that you will never forget in your entire life. Anyway, I'll get back to Uncharted. Why? Who knows? I'm keeping the surprise. But Tomb Raider is a game I really loved. I thought it was, for many reasons. First of all, it's basically Uncharted Lara Croft edition. And I thought, except for the story that went a little bit too much out there, I thought, but it was really well done. It was a really fun game mechanically, actingly. It was well put together. And it also brought Lara Croft back to the way she was designed initially, you know, all those, what was it, 20 years ago, in a way that was a strong, powerful female character that was not just a pair of boobs. And the way the character evolved in the 5 to 10 years after its inception was really discouraging because it's kind of like, you know, those Japanese fighting games. Ugh, again, I'm going to forget the name. How can I? Well, anyway, all of the Japanese fighting games, be it Soul Calibur or Dead or Alive, that's what it was, have gigantic boobed ladies, and it's you know, you guys know, I hope by now, that it's an issue I care about, and I think it's important, and I think it does have an effect. That's my personal opinion. So when Lara Croft came back to a strong female character that was, and that idea that she wasn't born that way and that she was formed in that game through trials and adventures was an exciting idea for me. And seeing the formation of a hero and of a real, you know, complex character hero, not just this one-dimensional, in that case I think it's fair to say guy or girl as characters. She was, again, the story was not the best, but she was a human being, and that was really I love games that have narrative. I love games that have characters. That's probably why I love Naughty Dog games, Naughty Dog games, because they really care about the narration and acting in their games. And Tomb Raider was kind of following those footsteps. And so this new one, I think it's Rise of the Tomb Raider, is about what happens after that trauma of the first game. And I'm really hoping that they script it in a way that is quote-unquote believable, that this is indeed a trauma and that Lara Croft has to work through. The reason I'm thinking of this is obviously because the trailer showed her in a shrink's office working through the horrible issues and trauma that she lived through in the first game. And certainly I'm not saying, you know, Tomb Raider should happen in a shrink's office, although that's certainly a narrative tool that they can use, her reliving some things, or, you know, maybe the shrink's office is happening after the events of the second game, where she's recounting everything that she went through, including the first game. So all of that is super exciting. I think they came out with a super solid game, and that on the foundation of this, they can make a spectacular game in the way that Uncharted 2 was built on the foundation, was a spectacular game built on the foundation of a good game. Uncharted 1, I don't think, was amazing. It was good, but it wasn't spectacular. So yeah, I guess you can hear it in my voice. Tomb Raider, Rise of the Tomb Raider for me is an excitatron game. The second one is, should I do Uncharted now? Yeah, I'm going to keep, you've probably guessed which one is the last one now, but Uncharted 4 doesn't require a huge amount of explanation. I mean, as I was saying, Uncharted 2, I think, is one of the best games I've ever played. 3 was good. It wasn't quite as good as the second one. It was a little bit, I don't want to say conceited, but at some point there's only so much you can do to make the new game better than the previous one. And that should tell you something about Uncharted 4, shouldn't it? Or at least it should tell me something. Certainly the trailer, or not the trailer, the 15 minutes of gameplay that we got at the PlayStation Experience back in, was it December? Might have been early December. Or maybe November, I can't remember. Anyway, it didn't convince me that Uncharted 4 was going to be a spectacular departure from Uncharted 3. It seems like it's probably going to be an evolution of that game, which I enjoyed Uncharted 3 enough and Uncharted the series enough that I want to play that next gen thing. And who knows, we might be pleasantly surprised by what happens with the actual game. I'm sure they've learned a lot from The Last of Us, which is also a game I adored. And it's even if it's just more Uncharted with next gen faces and environments, then I'm in. I'm at the same time, I'm really hoping it's like better, just quote unquote better than the previous ones, but I'm not sure how they can make that. So I'm going to be realistic and say I'm actually just excited about more Uncharted because I just love it that much. That's personal, but that's what it is. And finally, the last of the three Excitatron games for me of 2015 is Arkham Knight. I adore the Arkham City and Asylum games. I'm going to work through Origins. I only just launched it a couple of days ago. I'm going to play it, I'm sure. I understand it's not who developed Arkham. Rocksteady, was it? I can't remember. I'm terrible. I'm not prepared. I am not prepared. Yes, Rocksteady. So it was Warner Bros., I think, directly that made Arkham Origins and not Rocksteady. But I'm... Yeah, it's Warner Bros. Montreal that developed that one in the series. But I'm sure, you know, it seems fun enough, and I'm really hoping that Knight is just as good as City was. Some people prefer Asylum. Some people prefer Knight. I'm sorry, some people prefer Asylum. Some people prefer City. I don't think a lot of people have Origins as their best in the series selection, but those two games, I've told the story a couple of times, I think. I got them when my wife was away during a Christmas holiday a couple of years ago, maybe 3 years ago, and I played through both of them in like, I don't know, 4 days or something like that. They're so enjoyable, so fluid. The gameplay is so perfect. And honestly, I wasn't a big fan of Batman before I played those games. It just, the combat system was momentous. A lot of games have been inspired by that combat system. But it wasn't just that. The open worldliness it worked. It was fun. It was well written. I almost cried at the end of Arkham Asylum. Those of you who've played it will know that it was actually an emotional moment, and managing to make players emotional with characters, with, you know, caricatural characters like Batman and the Joker is really a feat of strength. And they managed to do it. Arkham City was just plain fun. It was very well written as well. I would stay, you know, minutes, like literal minutes, which is a long time, doing nothing, just perched on the top of a skyscraper, listening to the conversations that thugs were having in the streets. I don't know that I've ever done that in any game before, or anything like that. So yeah, it's really an awesome, mechanically, scriptedly, and just in every aspect, I enjoyed the Batman games, and they're fluid in a way that many other games don't manage to be, most notably that Assassin's Creed thing I described. So yeah, it's there. I could talk about Arkham for hours. It's a game I really love. But so that's why I'm so excited about Arkham Knight. Honestly, I don't even care all that much about the Batmobile thing, the Bat Tank feature that they've showcased a few times as the main new feature of the game. And even though people have said, I've heard a couple of reliable reports of people saying, it's actually fun. It works. I didn't think I was going to be excited about the vehicle, but I am. So that's great. And if that's the case, even better for me. But I'm just excited about having a solid quality Batman game to enjoy. It's been, you know, some series put out a game every year, And then they wonder why people get fatigued. And, you know, in the process, they get lots and lots of money. So maybe they have it right. But for Arkham, it's been a couple of years for me, even from the previous game. When did Origins come out? Let's see, October 25th, 2013, and Knight is coming out on June 2nd, 2015. So it's like a year and a half, or even more than a year and a half between the two games. So, you know, it's better than 1 year, right? I guess. Anyway, for me, I haven't played Origins yet, so it's been a little bit longer than that even. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited about this one as well. There are a couple of... I didn't mention things like Project Cars or even Mighty Number 9 was in some of the lists I looked at. Quantum Break. Yeah, they're all... I'm sure there are a lot of people excited for those games. They're just not exciting for me. And it doesn't mean that I'm not going to be... you know, enjoying them when they come out, and that I'm not going to be actually maybe blown away by some of them, possibly, but it's just I don't have that level of excitement for them right now. I'll just recap very quickly my tier 1 Excitatron games: Tomb Raider, Uncharted 4, Arkham Knight. Those games are the ones I can't wait for. And honestly, this year is going to be a super exciting year for games in general. The Steam Box might come back out of the forest where it's been lost in the past few months, which is a very exciting development for PC gaming, of which I'm a huge proponent. The next gen, quote unquote, the current gen consoles are going to be coming into their own as well this year. I think this year is the real year of PS4 and Xbox One. And there are just so many games. The list is really long of games that we can genuinely be excited about. So, and again, there are tons that I didn't mention, and tons of smaller games that are going to be really fun as well. And I'm not even talking about, you know, VR and all of those crazy things that are probably going to be happening as well. To an extent, I mean, just to say this, just to be on record, I think VR is definitely going to be a thing this year. It's just, it needs to be worked through in order to become what it really can be. And I think that's going to take a year or two to happen for us to figure out if it's more than a novelty and actually a really integral part of our video gaming experience. So we'll see. All right. I think that's going to be it for this show. I will be back with a co-host or more, probably one, in a couple of weeks, and we'll go through obviously all of the news items that will have come out in the meantime. If you want to get a hold of me, I'm available on Twitter at NotPatrick. That, I guess, you know, I say it all the time. Not Patrick. It's easy. If you want to comment on the show, tell me which games you are excited about and why, you can do so on FrenchSpin.com. That's the website where I talk about... That's the website where I host my shows. That's what happens there. All of my English language shows are hosted on FrenchSpin.com. You can find other shows as well on that site, including the Phileas Club. Well, actually, it's the only other one at the moment, at least. The Phileas Club, where I get people from different perspectives and cultures to talk about the news. It's like a news and current affairs show. And we get together from, like, I don't know, different countries and different cultures, like literally around the world, and discuss the news. And that gives you a very different opinion and view on things that we might think are pretty much set in our cultures. So I really encourage you to listen to it. It's really fun. It's important for me to keep the show enjoyable and entertaining. But at the same time, we cover things that are usually pretty serious. And I think the mix of both of those works, which is kind of surprising, but it does. So the Phileas Club, you can find it on frenchspin.com, and obviously you can subscribe to it. It's a podcast. That's what you do. So thanks for listening to that. That's going to be it for the show. We will talk to you again, as I was saying, in 2 months. And until then, I send you giant hugs, like seriously, giant French hugs. Don't ask what that entails. Just be trustful. And remember, as I was saying in my excited report of games, I want to be optimistic. See you soon. Bye.